Welcome back, everybody. This is the Spiritual Bazaar. I'm A, and this is an anonymous audio cast by someone on the road to recovery while exploring spiritual paths and the mystery of life. Today, I have my first guest, which I'm thoroughly excited about. Someone that I do know, but again, we are keeping my name anonymous, so we won't get into detail about that. But I do want to welcome Mark Fisher from the infamous Mark Fisher Fitness. Mark, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So, obviously, this program is about exploring spirituality and well-being, and what you do is all about well-being. So let's start from the very beginning, if you can. Was there a point in time where you felt that fitness was a sort of way of life for you that helped you to be a better person?
I think so, and I think it was interesting in that I don't think it really, frankly, started as that. I think, like many people, fitness was frankly a way to fix something that was broken, and anybody that has attempted to do that knows that one will have limited success, because I think it is kind of a core spiritual belief of mine that, like, there is no broken. And what was interesting is, I think, you know, the nature of the beast is, even when you're training purely for aesthetic goals, I do think there's something powerful about really prioritizing yourself and taking care of yourself. And I think that can provide a really powerful platform to experience a type of self-love. And certainly, as someone who owns a gym, it's really kind of an amazing thing to watch people come in, oftentimes trying to, in some cases, you know, frankly, fill a hole, and watch mm-hmm. the transformative power of being in a community of people that are working on truly the path to their physique goals are being kind and really taking care of themselves. So it's a really powerful thing to be a part of, and something I certainly can relate to in my own journey. Perhaps, you know, what I consider to be, like, kind of the perhaps biggest piece of really any behavioral change is the mm-hmm. value of community. And, you know, it's so interesting because fitness is so often a very solitary path. And that's not necessarily wrong, and I think there's people that do really well at that are naturally very interested in fitness. But I think when you're looking very broadly at any kind of behavioral change, something that seems to be pretty consistent is that it is very difficult to achieve sustainable behavioral change outside the context of some community. And I think that's really been the secret sauce of Mark Fisher Fitness. If anyone listening is familiar with us, we're actually known for having unicorns and, in some cases, dildos, and just being a very ribald, raucous, wild place. But in fact, I think a lot of our success, in addition to, like, having good fitness practices, is it's such sort of a community-based place.
People often refer to the members of Mark Fisher Fitness as ninjas. Why would you call people ninjas?
I wish I had, like, a really good reason. Like, I thought about it, and it seemed, I have to say, it was a little bit more, when I was speaking in tongues, when I was teaching, as I often did, I guess I got in the habit of calling people ninjas, and they started referring mm-hmm. themselves as ninjas. And then when my business partner came on board, we sort of adopted it. And again, I now know years later that in psychology, it's called a shared superordinate. And I think the image of a ninja is powerful, right? But I think with our, you know, sort of cultural conception of a ninja is someone that is agile and fierce. And I think that is certainly an image that I think people like pursuing athletic goals, particularly for the first time. There's something mm-hmm. about that I think is sort of, like, inspiring. It's just, I think, a shared part of our culture's consciousness that it just sort of felt right for how we were looking to show up. And I later found out, in fact, and I thought this was really powerful, that one of the definitions of the word ninja, in fact, means to endure. To endure. And I thought that was, like, so amazing, because in many ways, I think that is, again, one of the gifts, I think, of exercise, is you're quite literally practicing putting yourself in a position of adversity and then sort of seeing how you show up. So, you know, there's definitely also like just health stuff too, obviously, for the body physiologically. I think that's amazing. I love that too. But I'm most interested in these psycho-spiritual results. And I think there's something to be said for putting yourself in a position of adversity and then choosing to show up in a way that is like mindful and graceful and still going after whatever your pursuit is in that moment.
Well, I think the name also incites a sort of mysterious objective towards taking on some sort of challenge through mystery, because obviously you think of the ninja, you think of not just someone who can kick ass, but somebody who has some sort of insight or wisdom.
Yeah, it's really true. You're right. There's, I think, that other element as well, of not just like physically being a badass, but like I agree with you. I think there's a wisdom inherent in it. I think, and it's funny you mentioned the word mystery. Weirdly, is something like I think about a lot. I am like to read. I like to think about the types of things that I'm sure you're talking about in a podcast like this. And you know, I'm a proponent of mystery, right? Like this sort of like submission to the fact there's so many things that we'll just kind of never know, and that, you know, the nature of the human mind is it's limited. So when you're looking at these sort of like deep, profound spiritual truths, sort of definitionally, you can't get at them directly. And I think there's a comfort level with mystery that I think is sometimes a challenge for a society very rooted in logic and in many ways still very influenced by Enlightenment era thinking. An interesting thing for me that happened is like somebody who's become a very, very good friend of mine has really, in a beautiful way, really, really challenged me in that he is getting his doctorate in theology with the study of evil, and he's actually like kind of a devout, like somewhat traditional Catholic. Like this dude took like a plane flight to Calcutta as an 18-year-old to go find Mother Teresa and spent a year and a half sponge bathing dying Indians in Calcutta. So this is a legit bro. And he is probably one of the most intellectually and philosophically sophisticated people I have ever met, and has the most unbelievably beautiful interpretation of Catholicism that, coming from my background, has been an utter revelation to me. And one of the central precepts of his approach to Catholicism is that, by definition, it's about mystery, and that the nature of God is fundamentally unknowable, and any attempt to know God puts God into a box, and often an anthropomorphic box. So there is a sort of like living of the questions and ambiguity, I think, that is inherent to me in his spiritual practice that I find really inspiring and really beautiful. And it's been very humbling too, because I definitely am a guy sometimes I'm like, oh, like regular religion, that's lame, I'm a spiritualist. And to talk with him, someone who's like really a more evolved human being than me, he's like a better person and brighter than me, has been sort of very humbling to be like, wow, I need to really re-examine that belief and make space for a wider breadth of what spiritual practice could be.
Yo, I'm glad you said that too about putting God in a box. Obviously, with my Catholic background as well, I think that one of the things I had an issue with is that there seemed to be this sort of cookie cutter idea of what God is. And a lot of people that are religious, because they have a cookie cutter idea, they can't seem to stretch outside of whatever that concept is, which I think makes them less tolerant as people.
Yeah, it seems to be the case, right? You know, and you know, I'm hesitant to stereotype. I'm certainly, I don't know if you're familiar. Are you familiar with the work of Sam Harris by chance?
No.
Okay, so Sam Harris, really brilliant guy. He actually has his PhD in neuroscience, and he writes a lot on the topic of spirituality and religion, and is a very kind of extreme bent. He's sort of like almost like an extreme logic guy. And his whole theory is that essentially, this is very bold and it's not my particular opinion, that all religion is not a good depository for mankind's ethical intuitions. And therefore, if you are an apologist for religion, you have the blood of a child on your hand. Now, I'm exaggerating to some extent. That's not exactly his viewpoint, but suffice to say, he really doesn't see virtually any value in any religion. That's not really my perspective. But it's really interesting. I definitely went through a period that was really tough for me, because at one point I was actually, I don't know if you know this, I was going to go back to school to study comparative religion in my mid-20s.
I was going back.
Yeah, I was going back to City College, New York, because I wanted to. I was just studying all of the world religions, and I hoped to get a degree in that and classical philosophy, and then go on to get a doctorate in some sort of like clinical psychology, some sort of like social worker slash motivational speaker slash whatever. As it happens, in a roundabout way, I feel like that's kind of where that's like almost where I wound up in a very weird way.
But you're not a typical motivational speaker, that's for sure.
No, and I would feel like probably like shame if someone's like, he's a motivational speaker. I'd be like, I'm embarrassed, don't say that. Because there are certainly obviously connotations of that sort of image that I'm personally uncomfortable with, and obviously it means different things to different people, of course. But, you know, like I really aspire to be someone that, you know, can really like find ways to sort of raise people up and, you know, live comfortable with my own doubt, my own vulnerability, and, you know, my own failings. And that's really, I think, what like MFF at its heart aspires to be, right? And that's the type of thing where, you know, you're not going to see us like virtually ever talking about that in our marketing. But like really, as far as we're concerned, that's why MFF exists.
And when you say MFF, you mean Mark Fisher Fitness?
Yeah, Mark Fisher Fitness. Okay. You know, we like to get people like in shape, and we like people to, you know, get in touch with their fitness. But ideally, really just as a doorway on the path to them feeling empowered and living their best life. And I think that, you know, one of the things we've seen, fitness, I think, is a powerful keystone habit, because it becomes this doorway to your own volition, right? You get to see that you have agency, because you're like, well, you know, life is many things we can't control, right? It's things that, well, like, don't have power over,
sure.
But, you know, you can control, like, what you do, and you can control what you eat. And I think that opens up a possibility that maybe, you know, maybe we have more agency in our life than we think we do. Because I think there's a lot of people that can easily feel sort of disempowered and at effect of their environment. And I would love to stand for people having more power than they think they do. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, well, before my relapse, I was pretty steady going to the gym for about 3 years straight. You know, like stints here and there were not going so much, stints going a lot more. And I can definitely attest to the kick in endorphins that you get, and it does make you feel better. But clearly for me, it wasn't a preventative measure for me to not relapse. I mean, my recovery is a very complicated process. Simple steps, but very complicated as far as psychology and physiology, habits, damage that's done to people. But I do feel that fitness can be a cornerstone to anybody who is trying to feel, one, better about themselves, and one, feel better about their place in life. What is it about Mark Fisher, you as a person, what is it that you find that is most inspiring to a lot of the people that have come in there outside of going through the physical motions of fitness?
Yeah, I think it's really a large part of it is just people seeing for the first time that I can actually do this. Particularly at a place like Mark Fisher Fitness, where we say this in the most loving way, we always joke, like, we're all the Isle of Misfit Toys, right? It's all like the theater kids and the band kids and the chess club and the potheads. And there's something really powerful, I think, when people see that, like, I too can do this. Like, I too have a body. I too am someone that can embrace movement in my life. And again, none of this is to downplay the reality. There also, you know, there is a physiological component. We've seen the brain literally just works better. You could make an argument the brain quite literally only exists in order to move. And I would maintain that if people don't have any type of regular activity in their life, any type of regular exertion, their brain is just not going to be optimally functioning. Right, both like certainly for like the long term, if you look at things like helping improve cognitive function as we age, but also even, you know, in the day to day, even like right now. And at this point, that's like purely why I train. I mean, I want to look good, of course, and I want to be healthy, but I want my brain to be as acute and functioning at high levels possible so that I can sort of like be the kind of the best servant I can to my communities.
Yeah, and I don't know if this still holds up to snuff, but I do remember hearing that reading or studying something while you're moving actually helps you retain that information better.
Yeah, man, I'm not sure exactly if there's any research about that, but I can say anecdotally that is like absolutely the case for me. And my like absolute best life is reading some sort of either really interesting and stimulating information or something really powerful and inspiring while I'm doing physical activity is like the greatest high I can fathom. You know, and by the time I'm done, like, I am ready to go dominate the world.
And you were dominating, that is for sure, 39th Street.
Well, we are very dominant on 39th Street between 9th and 10th, closest to 9th.
There you go. Right on. So, but what about yourself personally? Where, you know, what inspires you to even have a sense that there is some sort of, well, let me ask you this first, because I'm making an assumption here. Do you think that there is some sort of universal life force or connection? Maybe even you use quantum physics to understand that. But is there something that you feel is beyond just the human brain as it functions?
Yeah, I have to sort of like, you know, always I have to qualify it by saying that, like, obviously I don't know, right? And I, you know, there's many things we won't know. And I am aware that perhaps, like, my belief that there is, because I do believe that there is, I fully concede that might just be like a trick of my mind. However,
that sounds very Catholic.
Yeah. You know, like, I don't know if, you know, it's just like my mind trying to comfort myself, but like I do align with it. Does make sense to me. I do feel like in my heart, I do feel intuitively that, you know, I'm a part of something like greater, right? And like my, I think the most sort of powerful for me sort of way of looking at cosmology, which again is like completely leaving any sort of like science, right? So we're like leaving the world of logic as sort of like an intuitive thing, is that quite literally, you know, all of the energy of the universe is definitionally like divine, right? Everything is sort of a divine energy, and that energy chose to differentiate itself in a sort of all of these different consciousnesses in order to know itself, because without being differentiated and knowing otherness, it couldn't know wholeness. And the metaphor to me that I always find sort of powerful is just like we're all these sort of like drops of waves, like momentarily floating through the sky. And feeling this sort of like separationness and this like otherness, and ultimately that, you know, at the end of the day, I believe like is illusion. I do believe it is all connected, but I think it's like a useful, purposeful, and beautiful illusion.
Right. Well, growing up Catholic, I can say that I've experienced that, you know, the preaching of, well, if you have doubt in your mind or you feel temptation, it could be the trickery of the devil. But in a sense, it could also be the inverse as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's, you know, Paul Tillich, I think, was the philosopher who sort of put forth that really like the, you know, it's sort of your like ethical, philosophical duty to question and doubt, right? And for me, I think that's so important, because like like something that I think is very like core to who I aspire to be is like humble, right? Which is like knowing that I don't know what I don't know, right? Like I know what I know. I know some things that I don't know, but the vast majority of the universe is things that I don't know that I don't know. And furthermore, there's so many things in my life that I've changed my mind about as I think my understanding has evolved, that, you know, I really, you know, try to, and again, I'm not perfect. I'm like a human. I'm definitely not perfect, but I try to find the fine line of being confident about like what seems to be true now and confident enough to take imperfect action, but still keep the door open and stay open-minded, because, you know, I think truth and my understanding of truth will hopefully continue to evolve and develop. And I don't want to stop that growth process.
Yeah. I think it's a thin line, and it's a hard thing to balance when you're thinking, I believe in something, and then how do you at the same time, that's where the paradox is, I guess, at the same time, you have to be open-minded enough to be flexible, which means how can you actually believe if you have some sort of doubt?
Yeah, it's a really wild, you know, I just wonder if it's one of those other, you know, paradoxes. You know, it seems to me there's so many things in the universe. So here's like a really out there philosophical pet theory that I think this is the appropriate conversation for. It seems to me that, you know, there's a lot of debate, okay, in philosophy about, does free will actually exist? Right? It's this huge, huge debate. Like, does free will actually exist, or is it the trick of the mind? And a lot of people would argue that free will definitionally does not exist, because if everything in your life is a combination of nature and nurture, nurture is just another variation of nature. So you could, from a certain perspective, look at all of the universe as essentially these infinite number of biochemical, mathematical equations just playing out. not necessarily towards some specific answer per se, but just sort of the inevitable unfolding. So the thought experiment there would go that if you were to change all the cells in your body with someone who became a serial killer, so now you had the exact everything the same as that serial killer, would you be a serial killer? And from this thought experiment's perspective, the answer would be like yes. And we're certainly seeing a lot of things in neuroscience that frankly are disturbing, right? A lot of things in neuroscience that are really starting to question, you know, how much things are in our control. So we see things, classic, for instance, you know, examples in the literature where someone gets a particular type of brain tumor, and after a life of being like a very diligent person, suddenly finds himself having a lot of promiscuous sex and drawn to gambling. We see, for instance, in certain medications for Parkinson's, there's a tipping point where it helps the Parkinson's symptoms, but if you have too much, you again become predisposed to be addicted to the dopamine high of gambling. Okay. So we see these things in the brain that seem to correlate with certain behaviors that begin to suggest, well, maybe, you know, maybe none of us should be hoity-toity. We're just sort of like this, like, you know, an accident of birth of what sort of cosmic goo you wind up with in your brain. My personal perspective is I feel that's a little reductionistic, and I do understand the things that are pointing towards that now. But when you think about what we know now compared to 300 years ago, I assume that we don't know anything. Right? Like, I just assume that, like, we know just such a small sliver of things that I'm reluctant to come to conclusions. And I wonder if there's a world where, like, they're both true. Right? And that doesn't kind of make sense, but maybe you have free will and you don't have free will at the same time.
Right. Well, I don't know if that's exactly what you're talking about, but if you think in terms of, yes, you're predisposed genetically. And for people with addiction, there's plenty of evidence to show that the brain does not fire certain endorphins and chemicals in the right way. Just like someone who is clinically depressed or has clinical anxiety, it's because the brain itself is sort of malfunctioning. However, as someone in recovery, and this could apply to anybody who's dealing with developed habits, one can overcome that genetic predisposition. Getting there is the hard part. Figuring it out is the hard part. But there is hope that you can change. So yes, I think that, you know, nurture can be you know, maleficent or beneficial. But in my case, I was raised, you know, with a very healthy upbringing, and, you know, I've done things that I, one, don't think that that's who I am, and two, I kind of felt like it's out of my control. But I know from going through my own experience and other people that I've been around that we can make a change. And so I think habit is something is like a that develops in the subconscious part of the mind, and I think the subconscious part of the mind is extraordinarily powerful. So I think that if one can break through and start working with why is my brain pre-programmed to think in a certain way, then I think you can make changes, and in a sense then you do have free will.
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, I could not, again, intuitively, everything in my heart utterly believes that as well. And like I said, I also actually logically think we will find out at some point that there's more to our brains than just gray matter. And furthermore, there's also the other, I think, question, perhaps the more useful question of just utility of like, what, like what beliefs lead to a life well lived, right? And that's, I think, an interesting change that I've gotten older is I've become, I don't want to say like I care less about whether things are true than useful, but I think as a younger person, I would get gripped like a dog with a bone in its mouth around really uncomfortable truths in a way that was like truly not useful and really not serving me. And one of my heroes, like some of my virtual mentors, is a guy named Tom Bilyeu who runs this amazing company called Quest Nutrition. So this company like has just like their growth in the past 4 years has been like utterly insane. I think they started around the same time as MFF. And I think they like do like $1 billion in sale. I'm not kidding, like crazy, crazy, crazy. And they have a podcast, and you come to see like, oh, that's because you're like you're trying to be a Jedi. Like you only had a business to become like a psycho-spiritual Jedi. So he has all these like really, I think, thoughtful, curated like systems of like principles. And one of them is, you know, I adopt beliefs and attitudes that move me towards my goals, right? and whether he has, you know, whether you do have free agency or not, it's like not, it's almost not relevant, right? Because it's kind of giving up the goat to be like, oh, well, it just doesn't matter. You know, nothing's in my control. So to me, it seems like the most like useful approach is with oneself to really embrace and live a life with a locus of control and a belief in your own ability to affect the world around you. And then I think with other people to be willing to hold them accountable, but like have empathy. And, you know, for me, this sort of core existential belief of I don't think I can ever judge anyone else because I don't know what it's like to be anyone else. Now, do I do it sometimes? Like, yeah, I'm not perfect. I'm totally not perfect. But to me, like, it like makes me a happy person moving towards my goal when I like hold, you know, a space in myself where I believe I have the agency to get better and change and move my life. And I believe other people do too. I'm just not in the business of like judging them if they struggle or fail to do things. Like, it's really not my place because I don't know what it's like to be them.
Right. And I know you don't want to speak in generalities, but when you're at Mark Fisher Fitness and you are doing your thing, I'm sure that because of that communal sense that you have, which I'm sure is extraordinarily supportive, and I've been there before and there's great energy, you know, do you get people that, you know, take you aside and get more personal with you and ask and share things with you?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, without getting into specifics, I mean, what is that experience like? And how do you feel when you feel like you have something to share? I mean, are you cautious because you're afraid of, you know, the consequences of that? I mean, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, first of all, the main feeling really is like honored. Right, like honored that someone would trust you to be vulnerable and really open up about what's really, really going on, which is like, you know, the types of conversations I'm like most interested in having is like, what is like really, really going on? You know, and I can do small talk. I think I've gotten like pretty adept at like telling jokes and talking about random things. Be like, so where are you? Tell me about your summer, right? Like, so I've learned about like how to do those things, but like I'm much more interested in these like sort of conversations, and. You know, as far as I think the other part of your question, like how, you know, if I have something to offer, do I ever feel reluctant to sort of like share? I honestly really don't, because I just believe like, you know, vulnerability just like wins, man, right? Like water always overcomes rock, soft always overcomes hard. And I think there's something about like if you're going to, you kind of almost have to like meet people where they're at, right? Now, to be clear, I believe we also have to kind of do so on their agenda, right? So I think as a separate sort of point of order, like the style of coaching we practice at Mark Fisher Fitness is based on this belief system. Again, this is like everybody knows what's best for them. It's not your job to be someone's guru or someone's expert. Frankly, you can't be because you don't know their life, right? Like you don't really know what's going on. All you can do is just kind of like hold space for them. Try to ask them open-ended questions that are going to help them shift their energy a little bit and just hold them in like unconditional positive regard.
Yeah, okay. You. So I just wanted to get this question in for you, Mark. So where does love fall into your paradigm?
I think like everywhere. I think everywhere. Like I think it's like the whole like everything like is an expression of love, or even in its absence is like a further sort of affirmation of it. My friend, the one I was telling you about, who's a theologian, says, and this just like blew my head open. I cry every time I think about it. And I was thinking about this today, actually, for some reason, that he was like, the central truth of Christianity is that love conquers death. And I
of Christianity. Okay.
Yeah, which like I would, you know, probably suppose like that for me is maybe like the central truth of like the universe, is that ultimately like love conquers death, right? And then, you know, something I think a lot about, and you know this, and you know the whole backstory behind it, I'm very aware of mortality, right? Like at all times, right? And I think like a part of me is always like grieving for the finiteness and the brevity of my life and the life of the people I love. But I do believe that because, you know, as I said, I do believe in a life that's more than just this physical existence. And like, to me, it's like love is almost synonymous with divinity, right? Like it's all love, like everything is love. And, you know, even when you think it's not, that's just further affirming that it is. It's just the shadow that gives you the contrast.
Yeah, and actually it just hit me now. I wonder, the unicorn images you use, might that actually be something symbolic of love? Or is it just a really cool unicorn?
Man. Yeah, I mean, I think it's like both. Like, I think, you know, we talk about like the unicorns hilarious here. Like, we always talk about like our lust for unicorn overlords. Mm-hmm. We talk about like when we're looking to like hire someone, we're like, oh, they can hear the call of the unicorns, right? Or like amongst ourselves, like we say in capital letters. It's so weird. It's so culty, right? We'll talk about that which we've been called to become, right? In capital.
Right. Well, it's funny you say culty because, you know, I'm in a 12-step program, and like it's easy on the surface when you look at it to be like, oh my God, it's so cultish. I mean, that's why, you know, it kind of scares people away. Then once you get into it, you're like, oh, everybody believes in something completely different. You know, we just all have this sort of commonality of trying to make ourselves better as people.
Absolutely, man. I think it's such a great point because I think so often, you know, a cult sort of definitionally is about sort of subjugating individuality, right? A cult is about you subsume your identity into some sort of like guru figure. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, many, like, I think all the good recovery groups and Mark Fisher Fitness, it's almost about the opposite, right? You are almost like celebrating your individuality within this context of an inclusive community where you have shared values, perhaps, right? You're like-minded and maybe, you know, in the case of an organization, you have a shared mission. But ultimately, I think that works best when we're celebrating what is unique and individual about us, right? Which in many ways you could say is like how God is knowing itself, is by manifesting through these like infinite different variations. And I would go so far as to say, I think there's like a certain obligation we all have to be the most robust and fullest expression of who we are, because we're the only opportunity that it will ever know itself in that channel. It's like there's this amazing letter by Martha Graham that she wrote to Agnes DeMille. These were two choreographers, and this was in the 40s, and Agnes DeMille just in Oklahoma, and she was like kind of bummed because she was like, oh man, you know, I did this musical that's like, yeah, it's cool, it's revolutionary, but you know, I did so much other work that was cooler. And Martha Graham was like, bitch please, she was like, it's not your job to judge your work. There is a quickening, she said. I was like, that's the best word ever. There is a quickening, a vitality in a life force inside each of us, and we're the only vessel that it will ever have. And it's not our job to even judge whether our work is like good or not as artists. And I believe we're all artists. It's our job to like live that out and give that away to the world around us. Because if we don't, the stakes are that the universe will never have the ability to experience that particular gift, that particular art.
Wow, that's beautiful. Yeah, I don't have any solid belief in anything per se, but I do believe in a sort of universal life force. And I do believe that there is sort of an expression of something going on via, you know, human beings and whoever knows however many other beings may be out there, or even just the Earth itself. So, Mark, thank you so much for coming onto the show. It was absolutely wonderful to hear from you. What's your website?
My website is markfisherfitness.com, and that's the home of MFF. Personally, people can find me at markfisherhumanbeing.com, mm-hmm. And that's where you can find various speaking engagements and keep up to the number of business thingies that I'm sticking my weird fingers inside of.
All right. Well, here's to thingies and unicorns.
Love them all.
All right. Cheers, brother. Thank you so much for coming on, and hopefully we'll get you on again.
Yeah, man. Absolute pleasure.
All right. Well, that's it for the Spiritual Bazaar. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Until next time, be well.